Okay, spoilers ahead.
Massive spoilers.
obligatory Marvel movie. This is going to have a lot of spoilers in it.
Yeah, massive spoilers. If you haven't seen the movie, I mean, if you want to listen, like, and you want to get things spoiled, then by all means, go ahead. But
that's what we're here for. We're going to spoil it for you.
We're going to go pretty in-depth conversation.
Definitely. It's hard to talk about this movie without spoilers. But, yeah, that's what's happening. Anyway, Aiden, we're back.
We are back, baby. Let's go.
Ironically, for you guys, just to give you an image, we're back on Zoom. Myself in Texas and Aiden in Ohio. This whole last semester, while we were in the same city, we had planned on recording some podcasts, but we were both so busy that we were unable to get around to it until now, Christmas break. So
yeah, literally by far the busiest semester that I've ever had. I don't know about you, but like I was running around a bunch, and like looking back, I don't know of like any spare day, like a weekend day, which is when we normally recorded the pod. Like looking back, I can't think of any weekend that I had free where I could do a pod episode. So
down to the fact that like we had planned to maybe do some stuff with the guys, like our friends, you, me, and a couple other guys, and even that was just like difficult to ever get around to because of all of our schedules.
Yeah.
In fact, it's probably worth talking about, Aiden, since we have a podcast about films. I directed a film, and Aiden produced it this semester.
Yes.
That was one of the things, in addition to just schoolwork, that made us so busy. But yeah, maybe, hey, what if we did an End Other Stuff episode on the film?
Yo, that'd be sick. Yeah.
It'd probably be a mini episode because the film's going to be like 8 minutes. It's a short film. But yeah, I'm in the editing process now, and that's what Aiden and I, one of the many things we were working on for these past few months while we were away.
Yes, and additionally, in our friend group, one of our friends, JR.
Yes.
Same weekend, actually, that Michael was doing his film. The short called Wallowing Tom. Yeah, our friend JR was also shooting upstate, I'm pretty sure.
Yeah, he was.
I didn't catch if it was upstate or in New Jersey, but
I don't want to out him here or like put the pressure on him, but like I'd love to have him on. And
yeah, that'd like, be fun. Yes.
Talk about his and watch it. Because I know mine will probably go on YouTube or Vimeo, so it will be free for everyone to watch. So you could easily take it. It's easier to watch that than the movies we're talking about because it will be only 8 minutes. It will be free, so that'd be fun. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. But since we were not able to record any podcast episodes this semester, we decided to hop back on for a Christmas special.
Hey.
And we were going to do a Christmas movie, but then Marvel's Spider-Man No Way Home hit theaters. And Michael, this is one of the first Marvel films he's seen since Endgame.
I think we were going to say ever. I'm like, dude, wait.
Yeah, literally ever.
He's never been into the... No, yeah. First ones, I didn't watch Eternals, Black Widow, or Shang-Chi.
Yeah, so. Michael has lifted his boycott on Marvel to watch Spider-Man No Way Home.
Absolutely.
And we are going to talk about it. So it's a little weird. I don't know that we've talked about a movie that's been in theaters only.
Yeah.
I don't know that it's been as accessible for people to watch. But still, I think it'll be a really, really fun conversation. So
yeah, well, it's made, what, $260 million?
Yeah, literally.
So
like,
there's like a really good chance that some of our fans have seen it. So
I would say so, yeah.
And it kind of happened that Aiden and I saw it on the same day, and there's Christmas DVD, elements in the movie. Spoilers.
So it's a spoiler.
It takes place in December. it felt kind of wrong to not do such a massive movie, which I'm going to get into the fact that it is a massive movie. So,
yeah. So we're going to talk about the movie, and then we're also going to sprinkle in some personalized Christmas fun, along the way, but
exciting yes. things.
Yes. We'll go ahead and take a break real quick for our sponsor, and we'll be right back to talk about Spider-Man No Way Home. All right, welcome back, everyone. Man, I am just so, so excited to talk about this movie. I went to see the Spider-Man in my hometown, which, first of all, I just want to say, I went to see it at my home theater in small town Jackson, Ohio, and it cost me $5.50 to go see Spider-Man.
Which is
ridiculous, because if I went to see it in New York, I would have had to pay probably like $22-$23.
Absolutely.
Which is insane. But no, it's very nice to see it for dirt cheap. And I saw it with my brother Cole. Shout out Cole. And we both sat in the back row and were geeking out the entire time. But yeah.
You know, it's interesting, actually, now that you talk about that, it's like, I think we both paid like $25 to go see Dune.
Yeah, we did, yeah.
Because we saw it on like the Regal 4D experience with the chairs shake and stuff. And it was great. And we both walked out of that really happy. But it's funny, like, I know we both saw Dune together. I think we started, you know, what are we on? This is season, we just rounded out season 4, right?
Yeah, this is like a one-off between and 5.
No, but I was just saying, like, I think we started the movie thing in the midst of Rona. And, like, there weren't movies coming out.
That's true.
So maybe, you know, this will probably go on in season 5, as we kind of alluded to. But, you know, it might be a fun thing to begin to, you know, actually see movies. Because I saw Dune with you. I got to see Licorice Pizza on a 70mm print. I saw French Dispatch, House of Gucci. I'm going to go see Nightmare Alley today. So, like, it's going to be fun to be able to plan movies, and we'll both go see them and do more as they're only in theaters. So,
for sure.
I'm excited about that for sure.
Yeah. Also, like, I know that the Jackson, Ohio movie experience is not like the Regal Cinema 4D experience. Sure. But $25 is
it's hard to beat $5.50.
Yeah, $25 is like a real dagger. Becomes, you know,
the screen seems bigger and the chair is more comfortable when you're only paying $5.50.
It's true. You know? It's true. Yeah, it's true.
But yeah, you said you're geeking out. I mean, I'll just start by saying I think that I'm going to critique this a bit harder than Aiden's going to, just because Aiden texted about, and I don't want to put words in your mouth, and you'll add nuance to your opinion, but you texted about it being potentially the best Marvel movie, arguably. And then I watched it and was like, no way it is. So we definitely have a little bit of a differing opinion, but like, I definitely had fun watching it. There were obviously, again, spoilers, guys, I think we've warned you enough, but spoilers, this is when the spoilers start. There were a few character introductions that obviously you geeked out about, but like, one of my favorite moments actually was seeing Daredevil in the movie.
I know, like, it was so like nonchalant too.
And that's what is so great about a movie when everyone's talking about like obvious characters that might be revealed, is like they reveal these lesser ones and you're like, oh, no way. So like, yeah, that was super fun. And I also noticed last night that Daredevil is now trending on Netflix, so
yeah,
a lot of people are jumping back on that, which is funny.
Yeah. No, I mean, I really enjoyed it. There were a lot of characters, a lot of callbacks from prior Spider-Man movies, which, you know, was leaked in like the year leading up to the film.
Mm-hmm.
It was like a long movie. There's a lot to unpack. Overarchingly, it was just like, I think, a good reason for why I think it was, so great is because of the characters and all the mm-hmm. callbacks to, you know, paying homage to all the previous Spider-Man films, but also just because it lived up to the hype that everyone created for it, which I know like shouldn't impact like the quality of the movie or anything, but I like couldn't help but get very excited, you know, whenever sure. I saw Green Goblin fly through the smoke on the bridge and Toby and Andrew come through the portals and stuff. It was all,
yes.
I was like shaking in my seat. It was all so amazing.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I guess let's talk about the character introductions. Cause I know we briefly talked about this right after we saw the movie. I think Andrew Garfield's character introduction, was the best in the movie. Ned, who, good job for Ned losing so much weight, by the way. He lost like 110 pounds since the last movie. It's crazy. But Ned has Doctor Strange's portal ring. He opens up a portal because they're trying to find Peter Parker. And you see Andrew Garfield way down the alley. and you immediately know it's not Toby or Tom Holland, and you're like, no way. And so Andrew Garfield runs up and jumps in. That was a great, great character introduction. I think I didn't like Tobey Maguire's character introduction, because about 2 minutes later, they do the exact same thing for Tobey Maguire. I wish he was introduced later. They did it so that they could fit in more conversations between the three Spider-Men. They wanted all three of them there for a long duration of the movie, and I guess I can appreciate that, but I do wish they maybe had sacrificed a bit more of that for a better, more independent and more special introduction for Tobey Maguire as the original Spider-Man. It just felt weird to put them in the same scene, both of them right there. But no, really creative way to do it, I think. Funny scene there with Ned's mother.
I think, I really liked Andrew's entrance. I do think that Toby's entrance was a little weak, especially because it wasn't wearing like the Spider-Man suit.
Yeah.
I think there's a way that it could have been done within that scene that would have been better. But just the way that it was, I wasn't really a huge fan of. It was still like really awesome to see him walk through the portal. And as soon as you saw Andrew, like you were expecting that Toby would appear at some point.
Yeah.
I also like really loved Green Goblin's entrance when you first saw him on the bridge.
Yes.
I thought that was super epic. I thought it was like it looked super epic as well. Christmas special sidebar. Michael, give me your top three Christmas songs.
Oh, we're going right into that. Okay, well, remind me to go back to the bridge scene. Okay. But you said three favorite Christmas songs?
Yes.
Oh, okay. I love White Christmas by the Drifters.
Okay.
It's like that quintet, those singers. I think they did Under the Boardwalk and stuff. Love that one. I love Last Christmas by Wham. George Michael. Always a classic. My third one, I love the Band-Aid one. Do They Know It's Christmas? It's like the 80s one with all the different 80s like pop stars singing it. It's super corny. Like, terrible song.
I don't know if I know what you're talking about.
I'll make it the intro music. How about that? Maybe we'll get a copyright strike or something. I don't know how that works on Spotify, but
yikes, bro.
I'll just play the instrumental or something. Or I'll hum it. But no, it's... It was in the movie Daddy's Home 2, where Mark Wahlberg and Will Ferrell sing it together. And then I was like, wait, I haven't heard that song in forever. And then after that, I was playing it at that time of year for like the next month. So, yeah. Do They Know It's Christmas? Or so it's called something along those lines. It's like an African relief fund program in the 80s that had this song behind it. Sort of like We Are the World. But terrible, terrible song. But it's definitely in my top three.
All right, respect.
How about you?
I would say Sleigh Ride.
Okay.
A big favorite. I would say Pennies from Heaven. Big favorite.
That's a Christmas song.
I feel like it's. I don't know that it explicitly is a Christmas song, but it's like normally only played around Christmas, I feel like.
Yeah, that's fair.
So I feel like it fits in with the season.
Which one? Which version? Ella Fitzgerald or what? Louis Armstrong?
The older one? I don't...
hold on. The one from a long time ago.
I'm looking at my my Apple Music. Louis Prima?
Louis Prima. The one that goes, shoopy doopy.
Yeah.
I love that one.
And then I would say, this is where it gets tough. I think I want to say Merry Christmas, Happy Holidays by NSYNC.
Oh, wow.
Okay, you were saying On the Bridge.
Well, no, I just got to say, good job for both of us not picking Mariah Carey, I guess.
It's overplayed, man. I'm sorry.
Oh, man. I love... A Little Drummer Boy by Justin Bieber. Where he goes, rum bum 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 bum. Love that one. But yeah, the bridge. I will say that the bridge scene, back to Spider-Man, the bridge scene, I think, was my favorite scene, just because I love Doc Ock. I think, thinking back to the older movies, I like Alfred Molina was so much fun in Spider-Man 2, and I think he was probably my favorite character that they brought back in this one. I guess outside of like Tobey Maguire and Andrew Garfield, but I absolutely love Alfred Molina. I thought his performance was awesome in the movie, so mm-hmm. much fun, and that bridge scene was so much fun.
Mm-hmm.
A good way to introduce how the Stark technology has control over the claws, mm-hmm. all that, and yeah, the introduction of Green Goblin as well, like you said. My other favorite mm-hmm. scene, I think, was the mirror dimension, which sort of using one of the most successful parts from Doctor Strange,
mm-hmm.
which is a movie, by the way, I think I would rank above No Way Home, Doctor mm-hmm. Strange, just because of how great the visual effects are in that movie and just how creative it is.
Mm-hmm.
I thought that this movie was less creative than that, but introducing that mirror dimension scene was so much fun. And the fact that it was actually like Doctor Strange and Spider-Man fighting as opposed to,
mm-hmm.
you know, a hero and a villain, made it, I think, even more special. So, yeah, I think those two scenes were my favorite scenes for sure. Which is interesting that my two favorite scenes only feature one Spider-Man and not
yeah.
three.
Yeah.
but I just thought those scenes were great.
Yeah. I also, just to get back to Green Goblin, I feel like Willem Dafoe's performance was like really, really solid.
Mm-hmm.
It was really cool. Just how he, I was talking to Cole before we started filming. Just cool how, like, just on screen, the switch between Osborn and Green Goblin is just like
yes.
so easy, but also just like he stepped away from the character for 20 years and he stepped back in and it looked like he lost none of it.
Yeah.
Yeah. Which was really, really cool to see. I would say one of my favorite scenes was when they were in Happy's apartment and Tom Holland's Peter Parker was working on the serum, I think, for Green Goblin. And his spidey senses started going off because he could tell that the Green Goblin was like in the room and it wasn't Osborn anymore.
Mm-hmm.
I thought that it was like kind of confusing at first, but I think like that was the point. Like we were getting the point of view of what Tom Holland's Spider-Man was sensing,
yes, if you will. Yeah.
But it was really interesting that like he could sense that mm-hmm. and like we were able to go along with it rather than just like he starts attacking everyone and
right,
you know. But I really enjoyed that scene. And I also think, you know, throughout that scene as well, whenever I don't understand why the lizard like stayed downstairs in the truck. Like,
yeah, I didn't know what was going on there.
It was like, oh, he didn't want to come up. Like, what? I don't. why were we just leaving a dinosaur down in the truck downstairs? But I also really enjoyed down in the apartment building lobby, just the parallel between the what is it? The surfer board or the glider?
The glider, Green Goblin, the Green Goblin glider,
the,
yeah.
The glider that he has and it coming up behind Aunt May. I really like the parallel there from the first Spider-Man.
Mm-hmm.
And also just the... I was like, you know, you like read stuff before the movie and I was like figuring that someone that was close to Tom Holland would probably die mm-hmm. Just to kind of spark some kind of character development. And as soon as I like... As soon as we got down to the lobby, I was like, yep, it's going to be Aunt May.
It's going to be Marcy Tomei. Yeah, it was sad. Yeah,
it was sad. It was a very emotional scene. I felt like it was done really well. I have to say,
sorry, go ahead.
No, go ahead.
I have to say, I was laughing during that scene.
Not
because I'm heartless, but because the girl behind me in the theater who spilled Coke on me, I will say,
No.
But I wasn't holding a grudge, but she was sobbing during that scene. She was legit like like for like 45 seconds straight to a minute. And my brother and I started laughing. It was like, oh my gosh. But yeah, so that scene was, that was a sad scene, but I could only find myself laughing. Yeah,
I felt like Tom Holland's acting in that scene was really well done as well. I feel like...
Yeah, he's a good actor. He's good.
Yeah, I feel like in general, like his acting in this third Spider-Man of his, I felt like was probably his best as Spider-Man, which was really cool to see, rather than just like the teenager from Queens. You know, he actually like, there was like actual... things Gross. That mattered, like he actually lost someone and he was trying to save the world from ultimate destruction in the multiverse. Yes. You know,
yes.
Like there were real stakes on the line, which was really cool to see.
Okay I have a lot of critiques. I'm gonna preface this, I'm gonna say two more things I liked and then go into all the don't likes.
Okay.
What'd I say? And then I think between those things, you should ask me a Christmas question just to lighten the mood.
Okay, sure.
I like the direction they're going because Tom Holland's going to be like in three more movies, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I like the direction they're going because at the end of this movie, he doesn't have Aunt May anymore. He doesn't really have anything related to Stark. He's like completely on his own. And he goes to an apartment and he's got his police scanner and his empty apartment and his homemade suit, which is what Spider-Man's supposed to be. I know that a lot of critiques for this trilogy have been Spider-Man's supposed to be this hero who is figuring things out on his own that doesn't have anyone else. They introduced this character as a member of the Avengers, as a sidekick to Tony Stark in Civil War. And so this whole time it's been like, wait, this isn't who Spider-Man is. Now they're getting to who Spider-Man is. And so this next trilogy, I think, will be good. So I like the direction that they're going.
Yeah.
My other thing I liked the stretching scene when the Spider-Men are stretching before
really
the battle.
Yeah.
It just was good. It was well done. Because there are a few things I didn't like a lot, because I kind of said this a second ago about like Toby's introduction was just in service of having a lot of moments between the three Spider-Men where they could answer questions that people ask about the three Spider-Men hanging out in one room.
Yeah.
And it felt super forced to me. But I like the stretching a lot.
Yeah. Do you want me to ask the Christmas
question? Ask the Christmas question, then I'll get to a bunch of critical things.
Just to tack on at the end of that. I really love the stretching bit where like I feel like there were just so many Marvel movies where this happens, like right before the big battle, there's just like some moment where everyone's just like mad chilling, you know? And it was so funny. They were just hanging out on the scaffolding and they were just like comparing notes about like being Spider-Man. And Andrew's like, yeah, like I'm, you know, I like hate myself or whatever. And Toby's like, no, you're amazing. He's like, I love you. Thank you. Yeah. That was a really cool interaction between all three of them. All right. Top three Christmas movies.
Oh boy. And I'll say this about Spider-Man as well. I think in that whole, like, being true to the lore of Spider-Man and being true to, like, the essence of who Spider-Man is, being his own hero, a big part of that is just New York. I feel like New York hasn't really been the center or the focus of this trilogy as it was in the Raimi trilogy with Tobey Maguire.
Yeah.
And so to see him at the end swinging in front of the tree in Rockefeller Center was awesome, and I love that they might take it there. That said, it top three it's Christmas movies, Home Alone 2, Lost in New York. Love Home Alone 2, you know? Love the first Home Alone, but I think something about the New York, I loved him, some of the great New York moments,
yeah,
you know?
Yeah, yeah.
Love that movie. I love Christmas in Connecticut. It's an old movie with Barbara Stanwyck where they have Christmas in Connecticut. That's a good one. I love Holiday Affair, where a woman has an affair during the holiday season.
Oh,
yeah. Well, actually, brutal. I don't even know if she does. I love the movie though. Honorable mentions.
Did I say you could do honorable? No.
No, but I did. I love the first Home Alone. The Man Who Came to Dinner is good. Yeah.
All right. I would say mine are Elf. I'm a huge Elf fan.
Okay, big Elf guy.
Christmas Vacation.
Oh, yeah.
It's a good one.
That's a classic.
And then also, I might get some hate for this one. This movie is like 30% on Rotten Tomatoes.
Oh, don't say what I think you're about to say.
I'm going to say Fred Claus.
Oh, no. That's not even what I was thinking, but with, that's bad, too.
With Vince Vaughn and, shoot, what's his name? The guy that plays Santa? Do you remember?
I'm going to be honest, I haven't seen it, but it looks
bad. No? No, dude, it's super funny, actually. Fred I haven't Claus. Seen it in many years, but I remember
love Vince Vaughn. I believe it you.
Leaving a good impression on me in my younger years. It's Paul Giamatti.
Oh my gosh, yeah.
Yeah. I'm a fan.
Speaking of Paul Giamatti, he was Rhino in The Amazing Spider-Man.
Oh, was he actually?
Yeah. Why didn't he come back through the portals in this movie?
That's a good question. He was in the little multiverse cloud thing.
Was he?
He was. I saw Rhino
there. I saw Scorpion in there.
Yeah.
You could see Scorpion. Anyway, all right, back to Spider-Man. Yeah, I got a lot of.
All right, just lay him down.
Okay. When they opened the movie and they started joking around immediately, I was a little mad. I know it's a Marvel movie and there's jokes. Actually, let me back up. Okay. here was my first impression. I liked the movie. Like I said, I came out of the movie with the mindset of like, that was fun. That was made for 12-year-olds, which is okay. It's a superhero movie, you know, and like people above 12 can also enjoy it, and I enjoyed it. But people are acting like it's like a crazy good movie, so I'm going to critique it as such. But then I was like, no, that's not even how I'm feeling right now, because I exited this movie not feeling like, oh, this movie had so many problems with it, which it does, but it was more like I didn't feel like I had just watched something with the Spider-Man from 2001 being introduced again. I didn't feel like it was that special of a movie. Like, in fact, we talked about Endgame, and you guys know my opinion of Endgame if you've listened to that episode. I felt Endgame, although I didn't like the movie, and I thought there were a lot of flaws, didn't like a lot about it, especially compared to Infinity War. I thought it was a really, like, grand, huge event still that I'm glad I saw in theaters. With this movie, I didn't exit it like it was that. You know, I think there was an expectation that this was going to be, like, the like biggest Marvel event so far, and you know the box office reflects that, but somehow it just didn't feel like that weighty to me. I thought that even Far From Home felt like it had more gravity to it, and Far From Home didn't have Tobey Maguire and Andrew Garfield and Willem Dafoe and all these people in it, so I felt that there was something missing in the plot that didn't quite match the gravity of how much was going into it, budget wise, star power wise, nostalgia-wise, there was something definitely missing there for me. So there were issues with the movie and like cinematically and those things, but that's not even really the problem I had. I think it was just the weight to it. I think that we came off of the Raimi trilogy, where Raimi makes like exclusively horror movies, then he makes some superhero movies, and they're darker in that way, even though they are pretty like happy-go-lucky as far as a lot of superhero movies go, but they have their dark tones to them. And then obviously Gwen dying in the Amazing Spider-Man movies, that was a dramatic way to end the series. And then these movies haven't been super serious, you know. Homecoming wasn't super serious, but Far From Home ends on this note that is just like, it was crazy that Mysterio reveals Peter Parker's identity. And so you enter this movie knowing that happened. I was kind of amped up to be like, this is going to be a serious movie where he's dealing with a lot of extra stresses and anxiety, and it's going to be darker perhaps. And then it opens and they kind of reveal that, and then it's like, they kind of joke about it, and it's joke after joke after joke, and I think that that kind of threw me off a bit. But that said, they also introduced it with Peter and MJ's relationship with Zendaya and Tom Holland, and I think their relationship on screen is awesome. And I think a lot of the best moments and my favorite moments in this were just between those two characters. I think they did so well on screen together.
I agree.
But I just think that we talked about stakes briefly a little bit ago. I just felt there were no stakes. And that was what I think screwed up the movie. And the reason why is, first, I don't think that the whole reputation and MIT thing was enough to warrant the spell that he asked of Doctor Strange. That's fine, because it is a mistake, and they established that. But right after doing the spell, he talks to the person on the bridge, and she says, yeah, I'm going to get you into MIT. But even before that, I never felt that it was like, I didn't believe that he would have gone to Doctor Strange and asked this without first, like, seeking other options, or even if he hadn't thought I could call the school and ask them to reconsider. I don't think he would have gone to Doctor Strange to ask this. I just think, like, that was, like, the big thing was, like, just believability. I also think that it wasn't believable enough for me that Aunt May saying, no, you are responsible for these people, and it's your responsibility to help Osborn. I don't think that was enough. That would have been enough for him to be like, yeah, I am going to keep them here. That was just a huge emotional shift that I was like, no way, that's how this goes. And now he's going to keep them here and make this decision. So I think there are some believability things. But I think that, stakes-wise, at any point in the movie, they could have pressed the button and they would have vanished and nothing would have been wrong. I think that was the big thing for me, was like, I don't know why he was trying to fix them. Science-wise and magic-wise, I don't know how fixing them would have dropped them back into their timelines alive. That was super unclear to me. Coming off of like Endgame and Infinity War, where I'm not saying it was scientifically accurate, but they explained things in a way that was like, okay, I can believe this. I can believe how they need to be careful about screwing up timelines, where they have to drop in. It all made sense. They did a good job of that in those movies. But in this, I was just like, they have not explained at all how this is going to, you know, them fixing their flaws is going to then make them alive. And how is that not going to screw up Tobey Maguire and Andrew Garfield's timelines as well? You know, how does this affect their lives? So I was a little bit, you know, confused about that. But yeah, either way, it was like, the whole movie I felt, well, they can just press this button and fix everything and nothing is going to be wrong. It's like, I didn't feel that helping them like fix their flaws was like actually a believable, like, no, we have to keep them here and risk like the stability of the universe to give Osborn his serum. I was like, that, no way. Like, this is all the risk versus reward was way off. Aiden, you have a question?
I just want to get back at you with a little with some points.
Okay.
I think I understand what you're saying, and I think that I agree that there were a lot of questions, like there were a lot of unanswered things, like some stuff that just like didn't make sense, some things they just didn't cover. However, I'm just going to play a little devil's advocate, whether I believe it or not. I think that Peter wanting to help everyone is just like a part of him and a part of like who Spider-Man is doing like the greater good and helping people, you know, yada, yada, yada. And I think that, just thinking in Peter's shoes, like, how would you feel if like these people, like, even though they're villains and they're monsters, they're still people. How would you feel if you just pressed a button and then they just like went back to dying over and over and over again, you know? I also think in terms of the MIT letter, and like the stakes of which he went to Doctor Strange, I think thinking in the shoes of a 17 or 18 year old, like I feel like Tom Holland's Peter Parker and Ned are like slightly immature, given that they have a Lego Death Star and
Legos on my desk right now.
Hey, I'm not saying anything, all right? Like, it's just like Legos are like a little young, you know, and there's nothing wrong with, you know, using those at age 18, age 20, whatever. It's just, you know, you have a fun young side, you know. But I think that Peter being on the young side, you know, maybe not thinking through all the options at first, but also like you are thrown into you're thrown into the Avengers, who is like there's a guy with an iron suit and there's like a 120 year old guy who throws a shield around, and there's a wizard that you went to space with and got dusted with, and all this jazz. And I think that like him going to Doctor Strange, because he's like had that relationship with him and he's like, oh, he's like an actual wizard, maybe he can like help me out, you know. I think that that's like a reasonable thing. Like, I think that and I like how they addressed him not like not calling MIT at first.
You're right. No. Oh, yeah, I totally agree about like that was, yeah.
Okay.
That was so unclear. No, I'm just saying, I agree about like how Doctor Strange was like, you didn't call them. I think that you're right. That was true to character.
And I think in terms of stakes, like, I just disagree.
Do you have anything to back that up?
Yeah, I mean, I just think like stakes, like, the Green Goblin killed his aunt, the only person that is like there for him now other than Happy. Like, Tony Stark's died, Aunt May has died, the only person that he has really is Happy and his girlfriend and Ned. And I think throughout the movie, instead of trying to kill the villains, he's trying to save them, because that's the good guy that Peter Parker is. And so he's trying to save them, but also make sure that they don't, you know, kill him, so they can't take over the entire city or whatever, and turn everyone into lizards for some reason. I still don't understand why we're trying to turn everyone into lizards, but
yeah. I'll say this. I think going back, I agree with you actually about like the motivation of like being in the head of a 17, 18 year old, of like the college being important and, you know, him wanting to help people. I agree with the motivation. The believability of like the continuation of that motivation was not there. Like, so yes, I agree that he wanted to help people and making that decision. Sure, I can give you that. But arguing that after all these things were happening, someone wouldn't have just pressed the button. And like, I just, the him wanting to help people was not anywhere near equal to the amount of damage he potentially caused or was going to cause. And I also think that like a part of that for me too was like, no one ever sat him down and said, you made an idiotic decision. And that was, I think, the problem for me, is I've ended this movie and I was like, I don't feel he made a good decision. I think you were supposed to think at the end of the movie, he sacrificed his aunt just to help these villains. The believability thing with like why fixing them was going to change anything in their timeline, and like the amount of damage that he did cause, including losing his aunt, to me was like, no, he did not make the right decision. And Aunt May, in her dying breaths, was telling him, no, you did the right thing, you got to help these people. I was like, no. Like not because I was super sad about Aunt May, but I was just like, I just am not in the camp of you did the right thing. It just, in any way. And I think that was just like, it just felt off to me. Where it's like, okay, yeah, I can get behind the hero has to do the right thing. Sure. But there felt, it just felt off, where it was like the emotional weight is just all wonky in this match.
I think adding on to what I was saying later, like after Aunt May died, he was like on top of the school and he was about ready to press the box, even after he'd met the other two Peter Parkers. But I think that the experiences that they shared and how they were all so similar, and how all of them were the same and wanting to help the people get better. Like Tobey Maguire knew that Doc Ock was like still good, and which granted he was already good at this time, in the movie, but like he knew he was a good person. It just like wasn't his fault. And I guess the same with Green Goblin. Like, I mean, yes, he's hurting all the people, but he can't really control when the Green Goblin comes out, you know? So it's like, yes, these people are bad. However, some of it's not entirely their fault, and they don't really deserve to die for something they can't entirely control. But I think that especially after the introduction of both Toby and Andrew, I think the inclination to not press the button was even more evident because Tom Holland's Peter Parker knew that like with the help of the other two, he could actually save them. And they were like on the same page as him, and they were like down to help, and they knew that these people mm-hmm. needed help. And so I think, and also just like the idea of just snapping them back as well. Like I think
the two other Peter Parkers, like, there's no chance of pressing the button. Yeah.
Yeah. I think the two other Peter Parkers like really played a heavy part in developing, Tom Holland's character, whether we saw it on screen or not. Sorry, go ahead.
Oh, I just want to say, just to respond, I didn't respond to you talking about the stakes of Aunt May dying. I don't think those are stakes. I think that's just that didn't add the stakes. I still think the stakes are just lacking. And again, I think, yeah, I can give you like, you know, all of the Spider-Men helping others in their nature is what keeps them from pressing the button. Still, I don't know what helping these people does, except for making the Spider-Man feel better. Like I really struggled to be like, okay, what does this do to their timelines? Like, apparently they drop back in and they're just okay. They get to live lives. It's a different timeline. They're dead anyway. And that was one of the big things is like, they press this button. It's not as if they feel pain. I don't think. It's like they're dead. It happened. And I was just confused by that. Maybe it repeats on a loop forever and they feel it forever. I don't think that's how it happened. But kind of vague.
Yeah.
I think it needed to be made clearer in order to solidify this is what's going to happen to these guys if we don't help them. It just all was, I think, very rudimentary and like undeveloped. Yeah.
Yeah. I do think that the whole timeline, like other timeline thing, was pretty, like, I had a lot of questions about and wasn't so sure about. And like maybe they'll answer that in a future film or something. Mm-hmm. Like if they bring mm-hmm. back Andrew Garfield and continue his Amazing Spider-Man series. But now that I'm thinking about it, I think like the stakes maybe weren't necessarily there. Like they were in Endgame where it was like, okay, we're trying to bring back half the universe.
Everyone's dead. Yeah.
Because everything was like pretty much self-inflicted on Tom Holland's Peter Parker. Like everything that happened in the movie was like on him. But I think that, I guess I'm thinking of the stakes more as the sacrifice at the end that he made, which like, yes, is still self-inflicted. But I think it's still part, like a part of the stakes, like in order to save everyone, he had to like make the ultimate sacrifice of like not death, but like.
And I think you're right, and I think the end of the movie was, I think it did get weightier near the end.
Yeah.
But that sacrifice of like sacrificing his relationship with
his girlfriend, and
that's not there the whole movie. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
It only is there when he says, make them forget me. And that was not between Doctor Strange first doing the spell at the beginning of the movie and then him making that decision in the end, I don't think about that once during the movie. So maybe if they had brought that up and made you think about like, if I don't fix this, I'm going to lose my relationship with my girlfriend. They're going to have to forget me so I can fix this. Maybe they should have said that earlier. And then you're like, that's on your mind.
Yeah. But I guess the way the conversation went with, Tom Holland and Doctor Strange was like, I guess Doctor Strange just like didn't realize that he could do that, or like maybe he did, but he just like knew it wasn't an option because Tom Holland didn't want to.
Because he would have forgot. Yeah,
right.
Because Doctor Strange didn't want to do it either.
Right, because Tony Stark's dead, Aunt May is dead, and like those two people are very important to Tom Holland, and making MJ forget and Ned forget and Happy forget, as well as Doctor Strange. Like I think we saw on screen, it took like a little bit of an emotional toll. Like this guy is like really like sacrificing everything to mm-hmm. save everyone. Mm-hmm. But yeah. What is your top Christmas tradition?
Ooh,
family tradition, individual tradition. Could be funny, could be heartwarming, could be a joke. It's all a prank.
I feel like the only thing we do consistently is like opening gifts, like together.
Okay.
Which is fun. Like, not just because you're getting gifts. Like, that's fun, obviously. But, like, I think just like gathering together, you're all in the same room, opening presents and sitting around. I like that. Because otherwise, I don't think we do anything that. Okay, so I'll do this. My birthday's in 2 days. It's the day before Christmas. Christmas Eve, as you call it, I guess. It's kind of a fun 48 hours of, like, it's my birthday. And we have, like, a birthday. We usually do, like, seafood on Christmas Eve for my birthday dinner. And then, like, because it's, like, an Italian thing. And then you sort
Italian
of...
Italian seafood, interesting. Okay.
Yeah, all of a sudden it's Christmas at midnight. So I don't know how much of a tradition that is, but, like, just that sort of few hours is always fun for me.
Yeah. 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 Sounds like a tradition to me. I would say every year on Christmas Eve, my family has a get together of family friends, which didn't happen last year due to COVID. But I think everyone in my family just like doesn't like hosting the party in general. It's just like a lot of work getting the house clean,
sure.
entertaining and yada yada. So I don't know if it's actually happening this year or not, which it's in 2 days. But normally we find out like the day of, like, oh, are we still doing this, you know?
Let's go.
It's like that's one of fun. The most like unplanned parties I've ever seen. It's just like, and like, I think like we used to send out invites for it, but then it just got to the point where it's like, okay, like people are just going to come anyways, at which like we stopped sending invites and people just still showed up.
Mm-hmm.
But then another tradition, one of my grandmas, my mom's mom, she gets everyone lottery tickets for Christmas in their stockings.
Wow.
Which is always a nice competition based entirely on luck.
Yes.
To see who gets the most money. And I can never turn them in because I'm never old enough.
Wow, that hurts.
I'm old enough now, but I don't think that I've won the past 2 years anything, unfortunately. So
that's a shame. This year, man.
Yeah. I would love to talk about the sacrifice that my friend Tom Holland's Peter Parker made at the end.
Okay.
Where you see that leading, and then also where you see a potential lead with Andrew Garfield Spider-Man and Tobey Maguire Spider-Man.
Yeah. I think it's a classic Marvel cop-out so that they don't have to use a budding star Zendaya if they can't get her. If she's in the middle of making Euphoria and she can't do Spider-Man, then they don't have to, because now they can go their separate ways. I wholeheartedly think that's why they left it ambiguous at the end.
Interesting.
Which bothered me. But I literally think that's it. Maybe she'll come back and maybe she'll be sort of another objective. That'll be another objective in a Spider-Man movie. Of like, I need to, it would be fun, you know, to see him try to remind MJ who he is. But yeah, I wholeheartedly think it was them leaving it open-ended in case they can't get the actor or in case they don't have the budget for that.
Interesting.
In terms of Toby and Andrew, I don't think they'll come back, but I've heard that they want them for the next Avengers because it is a multiverse movie. So that'd be fun. It sort of seems a bit taboo to do so. It sort of feels like they should only exist in this Spider-Man movie. And that this should be like this special sacred thing that, remember, this Spider-Man actor from 2006 came back for a movie. I feel like it should just be this one thing, but I worry about Marvel that they might keep doing it. So we'll see. We'll see. I know it's funny. Like, there's an interview with Andrew Garfield from a few years ago where he talked about his regrets for playing Spider-Man because they were such bad movies.
Mm-hmm.
It's just funny that he's back now. So I wonder how he'll look back on this movie, No Way Home. And I think that will probably inform whether or not they'll be back again. So
yeah. I don't know. I think I see what you're saying about having them return for the new Avengers. I think it would.
What's it called? What's the comic series called?
I think it's called like Secret War or something.
Secret Wars. Yeah.
I think it would be fun because I think like you're in the multiverse. Why not just get everyone that you can? You know, I feel like it would be fun. And also, I feel like one of the biggest problems with Marvel is the success that they're having. Like we're 25 films deep now, and I feel like at some point you have like every film you make has to be better than the last one.
Yeah.
But like, it's like, I mean, in terms of comic book movies, like Infinity War and Endgame, you know, were pretty solid, you know?
Yeah.
Like they're up there. And so at some point it's just like the impossible mission of doing better than that.
Mm-hmm.
And I feel like you have to pull out all the stops to keep trying to make things that are better. Which also like, again, I was talking to Cole before we recorded. Like one of the best parts about this movie is just the payoff that you get for watching everything. Like having watched all three of Toby's Spider-Mans and watching Andrew's Spider-Mans, which I didn't watch Andrew's Spider-Mans. And I still like followed along. I saw like clips on YouTube and stuff, so I know
you never major seen things that happen.
No.
Oh, wow. They're not good, but you should watch them.
I've seen it. Like, I know what happens. Like, I know that I know Lizard and Electro and the Green Goblin that shows up there that's far inferior than Willem Dafoe's.
Well, I will. Yeah, Dane DeHaan played him. And, you know, I was hoping James Franco was going to show up as Harry Osborn. I was really hoping for that. I was also kind of hoping for an Emma Stone Spider-Gwen.
Yeah.
But, you know, can't get it all.
Yeah. But I think that... you know, going off what I was saying about the Andrew Spider-Man's Gwen's death at the end of Amazing Spider-Man 2. Spoilers, sorry.
it's been out for 8 years. But
Yep. Sorry. But no, I really love that scene where MJ was falling off the scaffolding and Andrew saved her. Was like a really emotional part. I think I teared up a little bit when I saw that. You could just like really see the emotion in Andrew's face and what that meant to his character. But in terms of Tom Holland's Peter Parker, I think that the stakes, or I guess the sacrifice, the consequences of everything that he did, it was like, I really enjoyed it. Like, yeah, it sucks that everyone forgot him, but it was nice. Like, just thinking of recent, like, really popular, like, superhero or, like, sci-fi movies, I'm thinking specifically to Star Wars, where like the last Star Wars there was essentially like no sacrifice, like no consequences at all. Like the only consequence I can think of was C-3PO losing his memory, but then at the end they're just like, oh, found it.
I don't remember anything from that movie, so I think you're right.
Yeah. But I mean even in some Marvel films, like things just like no one dies and things just resolve and it is what it
sort
is.
Sort of like Endgame.
And I felt like this one was like whenever everyone forgot who he was, like I like obviously not my entire heart sunk because it wasn't like that like crazy sad or whatever, sure. But I like it really hit me. I was like, wow, that's like an actual consequence that a character's gonna have to live with for a long time. And I do think going back to what you said at the beginning where he's like on his own and he's hand making his own suit, which I love the new red and blue suit. Oh, it's great.
Yeah, it's cool.
Great to see the OG Spider-Man suit. But I am interested to see the next trilogy and how that plays out. I would be interested to see Zendaya come back. But I feel like I know where the story goes. Like,
yeah.
And then the very next Spider-Man with Tom Holland, Zendaya shows up for a few scenes. And then at the end, she's put in danger by the final battle. And then Tom Holland saves her. And then it's a new romance all over again. It feels kind of predictable from previous superhero movies. So, yeah. Do you have any other thoughts to add?
I do. Yeah. A few other things. Let me see. I think that while you were talking about how it was cool they brought back like different story elements, like I think that the him catching Zendaya, Andrew Garfield, was a great moment, you know. But I also think that there were some bad elements of that as well. Like the villains all explaining what happened to them in their movies, in their respective movies, I thought was really weak. I thought this similar thing I said during the Endgame podcast of like, you're relying completely on other movies. Just allow yourself to rely on those movies. Allow your audience, force your audience to see them. If that's what you're going to do, make them see all the Marvel movies and don't explain it in Endgame. I think here too, it's like, make them go back and watch The Amazing Spider-Man. Don't have these people, look, 75% of the audience has seen all the movies. And if the 25% are like, wait, who's this guy? They should go back and watch the movie. There are just things in the movie that I'm like, don't explain what happened to you. Because then you have this awkward 30 seconds of these characters standing in the middle of the frame, just monologuing about the movies they were in. And it does not feel natural. It feels very odd. That happened with Jamie Foxx and a couple of the other heroes. So I that was just one thing that stuck out to me that I just wish they would get past. Because I think like it's just a certain self-awareness that it draws you out of the movie. I think their biggest weakness right now, Marvel, is you're just so aware you're watching a Marvel movie. And I think if they get away from that and they just let the audience experience a story, it will go so much further. I think that similarly, there were a couple other self-aware moments. I think Great Power with Great Responsibility almost worked. And I think it did work with Marissa Tomei saying it. And you just sort of believe it because it's a Spider-Man movie and someone in his life has to think that. It's like, okay, Marissa Tomei says it. When they're all on top of the building and all three of the Spider-Men say it, I was like, stop, don't do this.
Yeah, that was a bit cringe.
It was a bit forced, and I wasn't super into the emotion there, so I think that that was a bit forced, but I did like when Marissa Tomei said it. But that was kind of another self-aware thing. Tobey Maguire calling Andrew Garfield amazing, specifically the word amazing. I was like, oh, come on, don't do that. So like little things like that here and there, which are just fun, and they want it to be fun. Again, it's for a younger audience, but it's just a little too far for me. Even like a super funny line, but even Jamie Foxx like referencing the fact that there is a black Spider-Man in Miles Morales. Super funny line, a cool interaction between Andrew Garfield and Jamie Foxx, because you wanted that from the previous movie. But even that was just like, okay, they're just aware of Miles Morales, and they're aware that the audience is aware of Miles Morales, and that even felt a little odd. Going on, like a couple more little things. I don't know why Jamie Foxx looked different. That was another kind of self-aware thing of like, we all know you hated how I looked in the previous movie. Now I look cool. And he even said that in the movie. It was pretty unexplained why he looked different, because all the other heroes looked identical. One thing I have to mention. I'm so happy they brought back Thomas Hayden Church as Sandman. Great villain from a bad movie, Spider-Man 3. It was interesting that he was in the sand the whole time, because that's not like part of his flaw in the previous movie. He's able to change back and forth. I think it was probably they weren't able to get the actor for very long, and so they had him in sand most of the time, which is fine. It didn't really bother me. But I'm just really happy they brought him back. And good job to this high school for getting four of their students into MIT. That's all I'm going to say. That's defying odds right there. I'll say it that much. I think that's all my notes. Let me just make sure. There's more about just the way Marvel movies look that don't foster good performances. There were times when Willem's performance was really good, I thought, but just the camera and just the texture or the quality of the image, it just feels... It just feels very artificial, and it kind of takes away from good performance. I think that I noticed that in the lab scene as well, when they're all making the several different cures for the different heroes. It felt very stage play-y, where they were talking to each other, and it was fun that they were, that Spider-Man were talking to each other and interacting. And then they're like, we're all done with our anecdotes. Let's bring them over to this table and talk more. Like, it was just like, there's better ways to do that. There's montage. Mm. There's a different way you can, you don't have to show them finish the cures. You can just cut to the next scene and the cures are there. It's like, these are all elements that through cinematic literacy, it's okay if you don't show everything. You can get to the next scene and we'll assume that they finished the cures. So like, I think a lot of that could be better edited. But all in all, I had fun. Excited for the next Tom Holland movies again, because they're going to be, I think, quintessential Spider-Man on his lonesome fighting crime. So excited about that. Yeah.
I just want to say a few things that don't necessarily need responses, but I just wanted to get out. Cool. I really loved the scene where like all the Spider-Mans come together, but they're not used to working with other people. There's like the little challenge that they have to overcome. I love how they were like, who's Peter 1, who's Peter 2, who's Peter 3? I thought I was Peter 2. That little clarification into all of them jumping off the bridge and all of them like yelling and hollering while they're swinging around. I actually watched Spider-Man 2, the Tobey Maguire one, the night before I saw No Way Home.
Okay.
And I remember a few times where Tobey Maguire was like swinging and yelling, just like having fun. I think that's some of like some of the beauty of the character of Spider-Man is like, yeah, he's a superhero trying to save the city, but is also just a kid like having fun.
It's pizza time.
Of course they all swing into the classic like pose going into battle. It looked pretty cool.
It was funny in the theater. One dude started clapping. Like, I had like a pretty dead audience in mind.
Yeah, me too.
There's a lot of like parents and stuff. It's so, like, this one dude was like, "Woo!" And then like no one else clapped.
Well, I saw a video online of when Andrew Garfield came through the portal. I saw a video of a theater just like going absolutely berserk.
Yeah, yeah.
And like, I don't like, I love that people are into it and I like want to be a part of that. But at the same time, like, I get so frustrated with noisy theaters. Like, I want to be able to hear the movie, you know?
That's fun, though, dude. Being in a moment like that. I was in moments like that for, like, Infinity War, I think.
Yeah.
When, like, Thor entered and people started clapping. Like it's pretty fun. But, yeah noise can be a bother as well.
Another thing, going back to what I said about Peter Parker just wanting to help people in general. Another point I thought of for comparison, I'm thinking back to Black Panther, how T'Challa wanted to help Michael B. Jordan's character, even though he knew he was bad. He knew, I guess it's different because he was like family and Wakandans are seemingly very close to one another. But just another example of a hero wanting to help a villain, even though he knows of his bad intentions. And yeah, I mean, I really loved it a lot. The hype lived up to the expectation. I would say it's at the top of my Marvel rankings. And looking forward to Tom Holland's next appearance as well. Also looking forward to Doctor Strange's next appearance for when his movie comes out in May. So,
yeah, it looks interesting. Definitely different. We didn't talk about the cutscene. Few things we didn't talk about. We didn't talk about J.K. Simmons as J. Jonah Jameson. Great performance. He always made me laugh during the movie. The cutscene. The Tom Hardy thing was a little disappointing. They kind of just, in the cutscene, revealed that he's not going to be in the movies. Because he gets
zapped back to
his dimension. But he releases the symbiote. He leaves the symbiote behind. So there will be a Venom. Hopefully they bring back Topher Grace as Venom from Spider-Man 3. No. I would be at the theater a week before it came out, if that was the case. It was fun. It was fun.
Real quick, good Christmas story that you have? Just something funny that happened on a Christmas or a Christmas Eve or something like that? I know mine, so I can say it while you're thinking.
Go for it.
1 year for Christmas, my mom woke up with a headache, and she was like, "Someone please go get me some Advil." My dad accidentally gave her Advil PM.
She fell asleep.
And we made it through Christmas gift opening, and then she crashed hard, and she was like sleeping all day. We had to like go to a grandparent's house, and she was like zonked the whole time. And she still says that it was the best Christmas she's ever had.
That's right. That's great. Funny Christmas memories. There's no fun in this household.
We do not have fun. There's no fun allowed.
We holiday hard, dude. No, I don't know. I have a sleep story. I remember one time, like, I used to plan out my birthdays, my Christmas Eve birthday. Like, I used to write down a list of like the things we're doing. And I, looking back, that's pretty narcissistic, but was fun. But no, I remember one time, like, I was planning on staying up all night playing video games and like until Christmas morning. I just remember eating dinner and falling asleep at like 8 p.m. Then waking up the next day and being so mad that I was probably like 8 or 9, but just being so mad that like, man, my birthday night is
really
gone.
Just ruined everything.
And then I woke up and I was like, oh, it's my birthday is over. So like, yeah, that was
tragic.
Looking back, funny, but in the moment, quite a tragedy. Yeah.
Yeah, this is on the verge of being a very long episode, so I think we should wrap it up.
Oh, it is.
Soon. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, guys, thank you for tuning in. Glad we got to talk about this movie. Mm-hmm. Looking forward to seeing more recent releases and talking about them on the pod. We'll let you guys know when we're going to be back.
One piece of news we didn't share. Michael and I are both studying abroad next semester. Michael will be in London. I'll be in Berlin, Germany. And which is so wild still.
It is.
Leaving in like a month. But I think that Michael's not doing a film next semester. Our class schedules are, I think Michael has 3-day class schedule. I have a 4-day class schedule. So we should have some time to grind out some episodes. They'll probably be on Zoom. We might try and I'm assuming that we'll meet up at some point during the semester in each other's cities. But I think we're really going to try and pump out some content just because it's fun for us and it's fun for all of you to listen. So
yeah,
stay on the lookout for that.
Absolutely. It'll be fun. Thank you guys again. Merry Christmas to you guys.
Yes, Merry Christmas.
Enjoy time with your family. God bless. And we'll see you soon.
Peace.